This episode of Policing Matters is brought to you by Lexipol, the experts in policy, training, wellness support, and grants assistance for first responders and government leaders. To learn more, visit lexipol.com. That's L-E-X-I-P-O-L.com. Welcome back to Policing Matters on police1.com. I'm your host, Jim Dudley. Thanks for checking us out. Be sure and check out our video version on the YouTube channel. And hey, we're heading into First Responder Wellness Week, which will run from March 25th through 29th. And again, include a week-long collection of coverage and activities under the theme of Stronger Every Day. Well, we're seeing more support for first responders and their families. It is so great to see. Today, our guests will go off the beaten path for a little bit to talk about preparing for the next phase in the LEO life, the law enforcement officer's life, retirement. Troy Anderson is a retired law enforcement officer and executive director of officer safety and wellness at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial and Fund. And he is a returning guest to Policing Matters and a great guy. Always good stuff to say. Welcome to Policing Matters, Troy Anderson.
Thanks so much for having me, Jim. Appreciate it.
Hey, so what is the National Law Enforcement Officer Memorial doing to commemorate the First Responder Wellness Week? What are the resources that you're offering this year?
Well, what I'll say right off the top here is that for our officer safety and wellness program, it is always First Responder Wellness Week. That's really, our focus is on safety and wellness. So we continue to promote and distribute programs throughout the year. You know, one of the things as I think about our Destination Zero program, we just finalized the deadline for applications. So as we're coming into this time right now, we are looking at an abundance of very, very good evidence-based programs that have been submitted from all around the country. So my team right now currently is not only evaluating all these programs because all the submissions are in and helping agencies build up their final programs. And these are resources that can be used all around the nation. I mean, these are amazing programs. But as we're looking at those programs, of course, now my team, we're all working to come up with summaries, and then we have to get our internal team together to evaluate these programs to find finalists that they then we bring forward to our national review panel. They will select the winners in the five different categories. And then from there, of course, we have to commission videos. So we send out videographers to all these winning agencies. And then, of course, in October during Police Weekend, we bring in those organizations, those winning organizations, and honor them and recognize them for their achievements. And you know, it's great for an organization to say that they won, because it's quite a feat in order to win that. And there's very, very stiff competition. But I think the real winners here in the end are the end users, right? The rank and file folks, the administrators, who have just these invaluable resources that they can find, hundreds of resources on our resource library under Officer Safety and Wellness at nleomf.org. They could go on there, and if they're thinking about, for example, maybe we want to create a retirement program, and I know we're going to be talking a lot about retirement today. You can go on there, you can look at I did it right before we spoke. I went on, I said, I'm going to see what we have here. So I went in, and when I tell you there are hundreds of resources, I just put in retirement under the search, and I found this phenomenal program from the Indianapolis Police Department. It's called Hire to Retire. It's a completely comprehensive program. I read through it. I said, this is exactly what I'm talking about. These are resources that are available at no cost to anybody around the nation, whether you're the chief administrator or you're the boot cop who's just coming out of the academy. Those are the types of resources that we have. And you can find it from everything from chaplaincy to, you know, it's really broken down really under four categories, if you will. It's tactical safety, it's psychological health, it's fitness and health, and it's a vehicle and roadside safety. So any sorts of whatever you can really envision in officer safety and wellness, we have program resources for you. So that, you know, we're certainly gearing up for doing that right now. And that's quite a bit. I mean, and clearly we're also gearing up for Police Week. National Police Week coming up, which is, as we talked about before we started here, it's a tremendous lift. But it is, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work. So we're really focused on that too. But we are constantly putting out programs. And even when in between those programs, we are also looking at trends. We're looking at our national fatality trends to see how officers are dying. So we can then think about how are we going to approach the solution piece. Mm-hmm. So as we look at those solutions, we bring together experts. We bring folks together for panels or roundtables. We conduct summits throughout the year where we bring people in and we make sure that we live stream them and put them on YouTube. So there's even more resources. So for us, really, First Responder Wellness Week, it really never ends. That is our sole focus. We have a two-pronged approach to how we do this. This is the mission: making it safer for those who serve and keeping names off the memorial walls. Everything that we do is surrounded that.
Yeah. Well, great goals. And what a good problem to have that there are so many great applications for the Destination Zero Award. We've had Tracy Toffner and Ben Blivens from Wisconsin and their great program up there on officer safety and wellness. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the spectrum in retirement, and the spectrum being, you know, you retire and you go into sleep mode as one end of the spectrum. And then people like you and me and so many others that just can't really, you know, take off our shoes and retire. We've got to keep busy. We got to do, you know, multiple different things.
Sure.
What are the common things? What are the different focuses that law enforcement should prepare for within regard of retirement coming up and the transition to civilian life? What are those really common things?
So one of the things that we did as we looked at this, and of course, you having a law enforcement background, me and any of your listeners who are paying attention right now, they're probably chuckling because as I think back on my career, I can't remember a time when more than two officers got together that the topic of retirement didn't come up. It always comes up. When are you going to retire? Where are you going to move to? What are you going to do? We talk about it very superficially, but I don't know that we talk necessarily about how are we going to get there? And how best are we going to be able to survive that transition? So as we were talking about it, fortunately, we had a very good sponsor, Mission Square Retirement. They were able to sponsor a program that we put together, which was Milestone Journey, the Officer Transition to Civilian Life. So we put this program together and we brought in national experts to talk about retirement. So we had, let's say we had a chaplain on the panel. We had a clinician on the panel. We had a cardiac surgeon, a cardiologist on the panel. We really brought together some amazing folks and we talked about all the different phases. So we want to talk about financial wellness, obviously. We want to talk about transitioning. And I think the one takeaway that I came out of that with Jim is it's never too early to plan your law enforcement retirement, but it's also never too late. It's never too late. So if somebody is listening right now, or if one of the listeners knows somebody who's transitioned out, it's never too late. It may be too late, or it may be later in the game to be, let's say, investing, right? That may be difficult to build up your financial wellness. Hopefully you've been addressing that, but it's never too late to invest in yourself. So we wanted to look at it, kind of break it down in the categories. In other words, what would we tell newer officers? What would we tell folks maybe in the beginning or in the middle portion of their career? And what would we talk to the folks about who are at the end or already retired, right? Let's look at those things. So each one of the experts was able to sort of weigh in on, using their expertise, weigh in on what you should be thinking about. So for example, when we're talking about financial wellness, when you first come in to an academy, I think that retirement should be talked about on day one. We should be talking about how do you take care of yourself financially? All right, so let's bring in the experts to talk about whatever options you have outside of any retirement plan you may have, right? So explain to them compound interest, explain to them investing, explain to them how if you put in this amount and you were to keep it in for 30 or 40 or 50 years, what it might look like at the end. I don't know that anybody really did that with us when we started, but it would be great to know that. Let's talk about the psychological piece. It is absolutely, we have universal and predictable signs and symptoms of post-traumatic stress. Anybody that comes into this job is going to experience traumas. It's now, what do we do with those traumas, Jim? So having experts come in and talk about what you could do periodically throughout your career, and are you seeing a therapist? Should you see it? Of course you should. Everybody should see it there, especially if you're in law enforcement. You should be doing a check-in. And I applaud agencies that make it mandatory that folks on their department come in for a once a year checkup. I think that that is laudable. I also will say that many folks that I've worked with over the years, both here and when I was the director of Trooper Wellness and Resilience for the Connecticut State Police, many officers need it more than once a year. They need to kind of, you know, process those traumas, process those experiences. And we're not just talking about professional crises. We're talking about personal crises too. So how are we dealing with these things along the way? So that was a really interesting piece, that psychological piece. And then of course, when we're talking about the physical component to this and hearing from a cardiologist who, you know, essentially we know that law enforcement, a male law enforcement officer, average age of death in this country is 57 years old. 57 years old. That's a staggering number. So what are we doing? Well, think about what a radio car or a beat car looks like out there. You get in the car, you're in it for 8 hours. You periodically get out to write a ticket, issue a summons, maybe investigate a complaint. But for the most part, you're in the car, you're riding around. Maybe your diet's not so good. Maybe you're not working out. So we started talking about that. We started talking about health screening. And are we checking ourselves periodically throughout our careers? So as you really, as you think about retirement and you're in law enforcement, it doesn't matter where you are on that spectrum. There are action items that need to be done. And it's not just getting together in police functions and talking about when are you going to retire and how much, you know, maybe have you saved. It needs to be more than that. It's an investment in ourselves. Encouraged to see how many agencies around the nation are making this a priority. They're recognizing that they need to take care of their officers, and wellness does matter. And when you look at the rates of retiree suicides, that number is twice as high as active law enforcement officers. So why are these officers taking their lives? Why? And I would say that it could have been mitigated, I think, through good, in many cases, through good retirement planning. Now, I'm not saying that retiring and that transition period into retirement is the causative factor, the sole causative factor. But I know that it is a stressor for many. And I have seen a lot of officers who have spent 20 or 30 years working. And even while they were working, they spent another 8 hours working after their shift because they're constantly working and constantly working overtime on their days off. Living beyond their means. How many officers out there are living beyond their means? It happens all the time. But if you're living beyond your means and you're relying on getting an extra 80 hours of overtime per pay period in order to keep that house with a four-car garage on the water and your new Bentley in the, I'm not saying that anybody has a Bentley, Jim, but you get what I'm saying. If you are relying on that, how are you going to be able to retire? How are you going to be able to afford that? You're adding stress onto yourself. So I think that and when you're looking at your own retirement, you really need to be honest with yourself. And I think that by watching this program, and I would encourage anybody to go on our website and find that transition program and just think about where you are in your career at this time, or somebody that you care about, where they are in their career, and listen to these experts talk about what is happening and what isn't happening and what should be done, what those action items are. I think it was eye-opening for me as somebody who has transitioned, although I feel like I maybe haven't, like you, haven't really transitioned out of law enforcement. Granted, we're not answering calls every day, but I'm still in law enforcement circles all the time, in the culture, and you know, sharing dialogue with good folks that are still actively doing it. And of course, I have to, and my team has to be constantly thinking about how can we take our data and apply it to the folks that need it, who are law enforcement. So that's really what our focus is. And we were so honored to be able to put that program together because there were just really some incredible takeaways that came out of that.
Yeah, and I mean, you talked about, you know, that the four groups, the beginners, you know, just entering into the profession, the 10 to 15 year group, the 25 to 30 year group, and the already, as you said, the already retired group, retired in service. You talk about financial you know, strategies early on in the career. I've told my own two sons that are both cops to get into deferred comp right away. Don't spend it all. Don't buy the boat and all that other stuff. You also talk about the psychological, which we're seeing much more today. I think it's awesome. You talk about, you know, those once a year mandatory check-ins. At my agency, we had peer support, and we also had mandatory psych screening post-critical incident or post-officer-involved shooting. Physical wellness. Most cops are already into some form of physical wellness. The spiritual, do you have anything that you're recommending? Are cops more likely to seek something in an app where they can multitask, or is that just so counterintuitive?
I think that some agencies do have apps that they provide, and there are a number of them out there at this point. But I think that when you look at chaplaincy in general, spirituality, right? So I equate that to chaplaincy in police work. And we had a very robust chaplaincy program in the agency that I came from, and I worked with them often. In fact, I also oversaw our critical incident stress management debriefing teams, and we always had a chaplain on every debriefing. I made that mandatory because, first of all, while somebody may not categorize themselves as a church every Sunday religious type person, I think everybody has a spirituality component. And I think that when you see evil and when you see, you know, horrific crimes against children and repeated fatalities and animal cruelty and all the things that law enforcement see, I think you sometimes lose that connection with that spirituality. And, you know, I think for a lot of folks, that can take you to a dark place. And I know that our chaplains, they were there in the good times and they were there in the bad times, sort of that ministry by presence, if you will, right? So they would go out on ride-alongs and they would come in and sit at roll call. Yes, they would come out to the ceremonies, but they'd also go out for death notifications. And if we had a really bad critical incident, I could use Sandy Hook as an example. I contacted, they were in my first wave of people I had coming to the scene when I got out there. I had my peer support people, my critical incident stress management people, and I had my chaplains coming. And after that, of course, we then brought in the clinical piece, right? Where we started to bring in our clinicians and, of course, doing debriefings. But that spirituality component, you know, especially for folks that have had repeated exposure to very, very dark scenes, I think it will help you through, help you process that, and also maybe restore your faith in whatever, whomever you may be thinking, whatever your God is, whatever your architect of the universe is, if you will, it may restore that faith, because I think those repeated exposures, it wears you down. You know, you went through it, I went through it, and I have seen it. You know, I think that adds to sometimes the cynicism that we see, and it takes a toll. So I think having any department right now that doesn't have a chaplain, I would encourage them to get one. Obviously, a culturally competent chaplain, somebody who really cares genuinely about law enforcement and wants to help, but they really do need to be there in the good times and the bad. You can't just have them show up when something's really bad. Nobody's going to have that connection or that relationship with them. We found how beneficial, I can't even tell you how beneficial it was. In fact, when my father passed away, it was one of our state police chaplains that came and gave his eulogy. That's the type of connection that I'm talking about. And, you know, really remarkable. So having our chaplain in on that panel discussion was very beneficial because he's able to process things in a way that if you weren't a chaplain, you wouldn't necessarily grasp that. And I can tell, even through the debriefings, the, you know, hundreds of debriefings that I've sat in on over the years, that there are times where officers will say, well, if there was a God, how could this have happened? Right. And I'm not in that position to be able to field that question, but a chaplain will field it wonderfully. And that's when I would defer over to them. And they are able to package that in a very digestible way, especially when they have relationships with the folks in the department. So I would recommend that if you don't have a chaplain, you should get a chaplain in your agency, or as many as you need. I think at one point in our organization, we had about 35. So we wanted to make sure that we had a couple at every troop and one of every denomination. So it's important. It's important.
Yeah, we had six in San Francisco. And I want to give a shout out to my good friend Jared Altick, Chaplain Jared Altick for Kansas City, Missouri, who he's got his own podcast called Hey Chaplain, and really good stuff there. I 100% agree with you. I want to talk, Troy, about your own retirement journey in a minute. But first, I'd like to take a moment and thank our sponsor.
Lexapol empowers first responders and public servants to best meet the needs of their residents safely and responsibly, serving more than 2 million public safety and government professionals in over 8,000 agencies and municipalities. Lexapol offers a range of solutions that includes policies, training, behavioral health resources, news and analysis, and grant assistance services for law enforcement, fire and rescue, EMS, local government, and other agencies dedicated to public safety. To learn more, visit lexipol.com. That's LEXIPOL.com.
And we're back, and I'm speaking with Troy Anderson from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial and Fund. Troy is a ex-retired police officer, executive director of the Officer Safety and Wellness at the Law Enforcement Officers Memorial and Fund. So, talking a little bit about the role of leadership in an organization, what is the police administrator's role in ensuring that retirement planning and supporting their officers is seen as a priority? What can they set up?
Well, when we look at wellness in general, and we happen to be talking about retiree wellness, but from an administrator standpoint, you should always just think about this. If your officers are well, if your officers are taken care of, your community will be well and taken care of, right? So we need to recognize that officer wellness begins at the date of hire. It begins when they enter the academy, and it needs to be brought up periodically. So just having a retirement discussion, maybe when they first are hired and they're in the academy, that's not enough. It should be part of in-service periodically throughout the years as they do it. And they should make, at some point, administrators should be trying to think about how they can have a retirement seminar within their agency. I can give you an example. Years ago, I thought about this when I was with the state police. And we did just this. We brought in an accountant. We brought in a psychologist. We brought in investment folks. We brought in folks from the comptroller's office. We brought in people from HR. Everybody came in, and we just kept doing it. I mean, it was a half-day event, and we did several of them. And it was, you could see the stress coming off, especially some of the officers that were older, that were nearer retirement. As they were walking out, they're shaking our hands, they're smiling. Oh, that makes sense. That's how my pension's calculated. Oh, that's the benefits that I'm going to have. They had no idea. So I think that you need to think about making sure that, yes, there's an indoctrination piece when you first get in, but it needs to be, as they say in the Indianapolis, right? As we talked about, it needs to be that hire to retire, right? Making sure that they're taken care of. The other thing is, what are we doing for our officers in retirement? What are we doing at that point of retirement? Think about this. I know some departments make a big deal about it. You see these videos on TV about officers calling out in their car, right? And they do the final call over the radio. Some departments don't do that. Some departments don't give you anything. They don't give you a plaque. There's no retirement party. There's nothing. You just sort of fade off. And I know from my own personal experience, and it was funny because I remember talking to my uncle years ago, who also retired from the state police in Connecticut. And he was one of those kind of guys that he liked to hang out with troopers. He was a trooper, and those were his favorite people. But when he retired, the troopers aren't calling, and they're not stopping by to visit like they used to. So what he would do is he'd stop by the barracks. He'd stop by the state police barracks to see some of his friends. And what he realized after a few years was his friends had retired too and moved to wherever they moved to. And nobody recognized him. And then here he was walking around in the halls, and these young cops are saying, "Who are you?" Right? So if you've given 30 years of your career to an agency, you don't want someone to say, "Who are you?" Right? That's a tough thing. So you need to think about retirees if you're an administrator, because one day you'll be one as well. And what are we doing for them? What are we doing for them throughout the process? And what are we doing to also honor The contributions that they made to this agency and this community, right? So what are we doing? Making them feel special. But you know, I think that if we were able to do that, it would go a long way toward keeping retirees well in the end, right? If we make, I don't know what you do. Maybe if you're a chief administrator, invite, have a retirees day once a year where everybody comes in and we have breakfast together. I mean, there are endless possibilities of what you can do. But you need to take care of your personnel. I don't have to tell you that, Jim. You know that. But you need to be focused on that retirement, because when there's a reason why officers can retire younger than most folks. And we know that it takes a toll on every part of who you are. It takes you away from your family. You're missing holidays. You're working midnight shifts. It beats you up mentally, physically, spiritually, psychologically. It's beating you up. So there are departments recognize this. 20, 30, whatever the retirement age is, but there could be people retiring in their early 40s. That's pretty early. And what are they going to do? And I just think that we need to, as administrators, you need to really think about how can we help throughout the career? How can we help with that transition? And what can we do to support them in that retirement time? Because it shouldn't be a severing of a relationship, right? It seems like I think when I hear people talk about the relationship that they have with their agency post-retirement, it almost sounds like they're talking about an ex-wife. It's almost like there was a divorce, right? You know what I'm talking about. It ended. And that's a sad thing when you think that you gave your best years, your best physical and mental health, you gave it all. And now you feel like you have to pay it alimony.
Yeah. Wow. What a comparison. Well, I know some agencies do it better than others, but you know, in the defund times and thin budgets, sometimes it's hard to keep up. I know really close to home that an agency is not providing, the range resources so that their retired officers can maintain their qualification and CCW status, which could make them a force multiplier. Sure. At that location. I know some agencies, with really tough recruiting, are hiring back some officers to come and serve in different capacities as well, background investigators and evidence technicians and things like that. Again, like you said, not in a radio car, right. Answer calls. But yeah, really valuable resource that a lot of departments don't take advantage of.
You bet.
So what about the family? How do we get the family involved?
Well, one thing we know that when the families are involved early on, and we had in the agency that I came from, we had a family night for recruits, and it wasn't just one. There were two events where we brought the family in a sort of like immersion, like welcome to the agency. This is the academy. This is what a day looks like for your recruit. Let's walk around and look at it. We brought in all the equipment. So the tactical team would bring their equipment, and we'd have road cars or cruisers that were out there that they could, that children could go through and significant others could go through. And really then we brought them, kind of separated the family from the recruit. And we brought in sort of mentors, if you will. We brought in troopers, husbands and wives to sit in the room, their significant others, to be able to say, this is what it's like to be the husband or wife or significant other of a state trooper. We brought kids into the same thing. The kids sat with children of state troopers, and they were able to sort of open a dialogue box, ask questions, get some answers from people who are actually having that shared experience. So this is super important. We also brought in our employee assistance program, and they talked about what they provide to the families. We brought in me, right? I came in as the state coordinator for the STOPS program, which was our state troopers offering peer support. We talked about peer support, critical incident stress management, what we do. We talked about those universal and predictable signs and symptoms of post-traumatic stress. We gave them handouts. When your recruit graduates from here and they are a state trooper and they come back and they say, I went to a SIDS death call and you happen to have an infant in your own house, here's two pages of signs you should look for. If you start to see these things, you very often will be the first person, even before your affected trooper, Have that courageous conversation with them. Talk to them. Listen, I've seen some changes. I notice you're not sleeping as much. I notice, you know, you're irritable. Maybe you're consuming too much alcohol, right? I've seen changes in you. And I know that because your agency thought enough about the family, now I know to think enough about you. Mm. So they need to be a part of it, but they need to be part of that retirement component as well. So we would have all of the same thing when we had our retirement counseling sessions. That wasn't just for the member. That was bring your family, bring your spouse, your significant other, sit through this so they understand what it looks like. They may have questions. They want to know what the options are. Should we select this? Should we select that? What about healthcare? What about dental? All these questions, right? There's a lot of questions. So include the family in everything you can do. We even would have... if we had a very serious critical incident. So I'll go back to Sandy Hook. It's a good example. After that, we had 200, there were 211 troopers that were in some way affected by that. Doesn't mean they all responded, but some were kind of working in a support capacity around that event. But we would have these a wellness events is what we were essentially having, but they were follow-up events. And we would invite the family members to go through that experience too. If you look at some, you see these post-critical incident seminars that you start to see around the nation. I think they're up to maybe 15 states they're in right now. You can bring your spouse to that. I think we're recognizing that we're not doing this in a silo and that you're only at work for 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day, but then whoever is at home supporting you, they should be fully informed as to what's going on. They should be part of that journey with you. And they can be a tremendous resource if they have exposure to this, to the knowledge and the resources. So we wanted to keep them informed. It also is nice because if they need something in the department, they know where to go, right? So now they have a contact person. Oh, I have a human resources. Not that they would have that, but maybe if it was a healthcare thing, they would know who they could contact. Or they had a question about something, they would know where to go. So families are super important, as we all know. And I mean, I think about my own three daughters; they're my favorite people in the whole world. I mean, I love the fact that they were around for my journey of going through law enforcement. I love that they were going to the ceremonies and all the other things. But I know that those are special memories for them, as it is for me. And I know that officers feel that way too. So. If you're an administrator, you should be including families in every step of this. It's super important. I'm talking about from day one, they should be in the academy and they should be there on that retirement date too. All and everything in between, super important.
Yeah, and so finally, you know, at the end of our session today, I want to ask you about your own transition to civilian life, such as it is. I know you're still busy and involved and doing really good things for the law enforcement community, the positives, the struggles, the best practices. What have you found helpful in getting to where you are today? And then the next phase after this?
Well, for me, it really is a practice what you preach, right? That's really what it's about. So I look at my career sort of, the first half of it was doing that road work and being a duty sergeant and those sorts of things. But the second half of my career, really about 15 years of it, have been in solely around officer safety and wellness, really about wellness. So what sort of hypocrite would I be if I told folks that they should go see a therapist and I didn't go see a therapist? So I would do that. And, you know, and I was the one thing that I learned very early in my career. And I think for me, it was probably the most valuable lesson for me. And I can't say this for everybody, but if you think about it, I think it makes sense. And I'm not giving advice here, so I'm just telling you what worked for me. I think about all the calls that I've been to over the years, and some of those calls, they're too horrific to even tell anybody else, right? But I recognized early on in my career that trauma that I was responding to, the trauma that the survivors were feeling there, it wasn't mine. It wasn't mine. I was there to investigate. I was there to support. I was there to do all the things that we know as cops we need to do. But what I was not there to do was compartmentalize and neatly box up their trauma and put it away in my storage compartment. Because I knew that if I did that, and I think it's a natural tendency to do that as a compassionate, empathetic person. And I know that our officers are that. But you can't go through an entire career doing that, because you're going to get bogged down. You're going to run out of storage space. And at some point, if you neglect you, who's going to help the helper? You need to take care of yourself. So I would remind myself, when I would get to a call, before I get out of the car, I'd know that I was getting dispatched to something. Let's just say I was getting dispatched to something. Obviously, if it was a shootout at a traffic stop, that's a different story. But I would remind myself that it's showtime. When I would say it's showtime to myself, what that meant was I am going in there to do a job. I can't leave there traumatized. As much as I can mitigate that, I need to mitigate that. And if I do, obviously you can't, we don't have some genetic predisposition to, you know, put up a wall and keep us isolated. That doesn't happen. But I did know that I had a good support system. I knew what my resources were, whether it was a peer support team or whether it was our employee assistance program or a clinician, a culturally competent clinician that I found on my own. But that was so valuable for me to understand early in my career, because over the years, as I was now practicing wellness and implementing these programs and managing these programs, I started talking to folks who didn't realize that. And I started listening to what was happening. And what had happened was they collected up the boxes. They were carrying all of these traumas with them. And we're not even talking about the multiplier of your own personal traumas. I know that there are no cops that have ever been divorced in this country, but could you imagine if that's ever happened? Right? You go through a divorce, you lose a family member, you lose a valued pet, you get, right? Oh, these are all your personal things that are happening. Combine that with the other, but those are your traumas. And that's what I'm trying to say. You know, those are yours, not the ones you're going to in the calls. So you got to take care of yourself. So for me, my transition was made much easier by the fact that I saw folks who did it right. And I saw folks who wished that they could have gone back and done it differently because the end result wasn't good. And I can even tell you, as a duty supervisor, going out to a call of somebody who worked out of the same barracks that I worked out of, who took his own life after becoming a chronic alcoholic and then taking his own life. Mm-hmm. And I listened to the family and I listened to the journey and I said, I see where we went wrong. Now, you're very correct in saying that I'm really not, I don't feel like I'm not removed very far from the profession. And I haven't been. I mean, I've been here doing this since I was 18 years old when I joined the military police. So I've been doing this my entire adult life. And quite frankly, cops are my favorite people. And at times they can also be difficult, but they are my favorite people. So I have remained committed to supporting them in any way that I can. And I also see the value and understand inherently the value behind taking care of yourself mentally, physically, and spiritually. So because I practiced it and because I saw sort of when you come to that fork in the road and you make the good decision, the right decision or the wrong, I tried to make the right one for me. And I believe that I have, because I have been able to stay in the game, if you will. And I hope that even after I transition, in fact, I don't hope. Hope isn't a business strategy. I know that when I do eventually retire, and you see me around on a golf course somewhere in Southwest Florida, I value my entire experience in law enforcement and the relationships and the folks along the way and the fact that I was able to contribute by helping the helper. But at the same time, I also value my relationship with myself. I practice good self-talk. You know, self-talk is pretty important. Good self-talk, you know, talk yourself up a little. Be your own cheerleader sometimes, because we don't have a lot of cheerleaders out there. So do it. Talk yourself up. But I know that I'm going to be all right. I know that I'm going to be okay. This was my career. These are my relationships, but my life is mine. And I think that everything that I've done to get to where I am now and to get to where I will eventually be in retirement, of course, you know, tomorrow's promised to nobody. But I know that I will be in a situation to really fully enjoy that peace where I can just kick back and worry about what's for dinner. And that's the only thing I have to worry about.
Well, that's great advice and really good advice in light of some of the negative perspectives on policing. And we do know, those inside the policing industry know how valuable and noble the work is. I'm so thankful to you and the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial and Fund for what you do for officers across the country, the prevention work that you do. the great resources that you offer, and then the memory that you honor every year, and actually all around year. But you know, we highlight these days and months where we recognize law enforcement officers. But yeah, I really love your suggestion to, you know, acknowledge ourselves and the work that we've done and the work that we're doing. Hey, thanks for spending so much time with us today. I really appreciate it, Troy.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it too. Good being here.
So, Executive Director of Officer Safety and Wellness at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial and Fund, Troy Anderson, what a great career. He's paddling into shore now, and we hope that you all make that good transition from work to retirement, whatever you do, open up a bait shop or be a greeter at a Walmart or whatever you're going to do, enjoy it. Hey, thanks for taking time. Listeners, drop me a line. Let me know what you think about today's show at policingmatters@policeone.com. And take good care. Hope to talk to you again real soon. I'm Jim Dudley.